This is a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. Go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
It's 5 o'clock on a Friday afternoon. My name's Jacob.
Well, I must be Mercedes then. And we're on community radio 3CR with Friday Rave. Here we are, Community Radio 3CR.
You're back, it's Friday afternoon. I'm Mercedes here with Jake, and it's 5 o'clock on Friday afternoon, and you're with a Friday Rave on Community Radio 3CR.
And the truth is, it's not actually 5 o'clock, it's about 1 o'clock.
Oh, that's true.
In the afternoon, and this is a pre-record. So if the world turns to shit in the next couple of hours, you know why we're not commenting on it.
Exactly. Well, I mean, it's already turned to shit.
Oh, mate. I mean, what can you say? But anyway, you listen on Community Radio 3CR 855 on your AM dial.
And you might be listening to it through 3CR Digital or your favourite listening app, or listening back by your favourite podcast client.
Or your surveillance helicopter in the sky, proudly manufactured by Leonardo, the company, what would you call it? The first company that was the home of fascism in Mussolini's Italy, that's now making choppers for the Victorian police to spy on you and me. But anyway, first thing up today, and we're playing it by ear, I've got to say, a little bit today, and we're just doing this off the top of our heads, hardly any prep involved at all, but we did say we wanted to talk about the tariffs.
Yeah, we're kind of sitting here and going, like, what? It all feels a little bit overwhelming, I guess, and, you know, where do we go from here? But on the news and main news has been about Trump's tariffs that he's slapped on everything.
10% to the British Indian Ocean Territories, 10% to Herta McDonnell Islands. I mean, how are the people of the Chagos Islands going to cope?
How are they going to cope with the six B-2 bombers that are still there that we spoke about last week?
This is it, the B-2 bombers that are sitting there. And, yeah, I don't know. I didn't know where to start. When I was thinking about it in my head, I thought, we'll start in the Middle East, but the British Indian Ocean Territories, or we should call them the Chagos Islands. I mean, people might not be aware, the Chagos Islands are being returned to Mauritius after being occupied by Britain for a long time and being called a part of the British Indian Ocean Territory, BIOT. And that was put on hold pending the US election. But Trump has said that he supports that, except for Diego Garcia. So a new deal has been done where they're leasing it, Diego Garcia, to the United States.
Yeah, 99-year lease is what is on the cards to get the U.S. military base, which is a really strategic base. The U.S. are not going to want to lose that base, because that's where a lot of the flight and the fighter jets, rather, and B-2 bombers are bombing Yemen.
Yeah, that's right. And they're coming out of the United States, across the Pacific, in Australia.
Fueling up out of Amberley.
Going on to Diego Garcia.
And then just sitting there waiting as a forward posturing.
Yeah, and there is actually serious talk about it, about them gathering there for a strike on Iran. Which is absolutely crazy. I mean, there's no other reason for them to be there. So if they're not going to strike on Iran, and Trump's saying there's going to be big bombing, bombing like they haven't seen before, they're there, whether or not, as I say, they are actually going to strike Iran, they're there threatening to strike Iran, which of course has led Iran and various politicians and military people in Iran to talk about an immediate bombing of Diego Garcia. So this is what we're happening here. I mean, we're talking about tariffs. And really, in Australia, when we're talking about tariffs, it's about how it's going to affect our bottom line, like the people, whether we're going to, you know, there's going to be an increase in or a decrease in wage growth, whether things like our Netflix subscriptions are going to go up. And this is the part that I'm really... Obviously, it hurts and it troubles my soul when I look at the atrocities in Palestine, in Gaza, in West Bank, in Syria, in Sudan, on the border between US and Mexico, and everywhere it's spreading and spreading and spreading. But a lot of that, I've got to be honest, is an intellectual pain.
Mm.
Because I...
How do you mean?
Well, I'm not there. Like, I know the hurt and I know the suffering.
Mm.
But the pain that really hurts me, that makes me question things, is the pain of my own people. Here in Australia, being more concerned about tariffs than they are about the bombing of Yemen, about the decimation of Palestine.
And the fact that Israel have murdered 1,000 Palestinians in the last 2 weeks doesn't even cop a mention.
Doesn't even, and it's normalised.
Yeah.
It's absolutely normalised. And we were talking about this earlier in the week, you and I, Mercedes, about how a big part of the fascist aesthetic is about normalising war.
And making an aesthetic of it. And I think that, you know, what we're seeing out of the US, you know, and these fascistic alien immigration laws, what's the correct term?
Doesn't matter what the correct term is.
And the deportations of people to El Salvador, and the US is making these almost cinematic films, which normalizes it, but also provides people, you know, flat out racist with and fascistic tendencies to make it okay to celebrate this sort of behavior, and it's normalizing. But what it does also is it kind of creates this almost sci-fi fantasy in which this is happening. But in the reality that we know that it's real and that it is happening, it instills an underground, an underlying fear that you could be next. And that is absolutely true. But also, you know, I think as you said earlier when we were chatting about this in the week, that it also gives people a superiority of that this is happening to other people, which forces the dehumanization. And over decades of Islamophobic propaganda in the dehumanization of Muslims and that has happened, it just makes it okay. And now in the public or in the social psyche.
It is, and it's still there. Like, I remember during the first Gulf War in, when was it, 1990, 1991, people were on the streets. The term ragheads was being used quite openly.
And it's a term that's been used throughout the military, just as normalised in the military.
Yeah,
it's
disgusting. Ragheads or towelheads.
Ugh.
It's, and you can't say those words anymore, all right? Yeah, and good that you can't say those words anymore. But criticising the language hasn't stopped the attitude.
Yeah.
We still have that. We still have that. Well, not you and I, and hopefully none of you listeners. But in the mainstream Australian society, we still have that. And I think that's because with the normalisation of war, and when everything like this is happening, it's on our screens, and as you say, cinematic. Cinematic, I think you meant to talk about the production qualities and the way it's done.
Yeah, that almost makes it look like a film. So, you know, the US government released this week these videos of, you know, with drone footage and slow motion of these deportations happening in real time. It just evokes this feeling of the shock of the images that came out of Abu Ghraib in Iraq. And then now that these are images that are being broadcast by the US government themselves.
Yeah, it's crazy. And I think the other thing about making it look like a film is because we're all used to watching films, we all watch films, even I watch the occasional film, part of what the cinematic experience is identifying with the people in the films.
Mm.
And I think what it does is it gives us the opportunity to identify, well, to choose which side of the gun we identify with.
Yeah. And in making it sort of this very real yet seemingly surreal. It creates the idea of a fantasy or something that removes it from the removes the viewer from the reality of what's actually happening, even though that we know that these are real life deportations. Families are being ripped apart. This is real life war. People are being torn to shreds by bombs. And that is something that is in making these films, it's normalizing that horror that we're viewing on our screens of a live stream genocide. Not for people like you and me, and not for, you know, listeners and people who are out on the streets, but it's allowing a space for people to turn away.
It's encouraging people to turn away. Mm. Like, because we talk about cinematic, and we've mentioned before, and the role of the Pentagon in all the blockbusters that we see on all the military blockbusters we see on our screens. And what they do is they help to demonize the people who look like the people we're seeing in the US propaganda videos that you're now saying, and empathize with the police. It gives us the backstory. You know, every movie we see, the ICE people and the police people and the CIA are genuinely good people trying to stop this. And sometimes they have to break laws and be heavy-handed. And we're encouraged to empathize with the oppressor rather than the oppressed. And that's what these little videos you're watching are counting on.
Yeah, or to fetishize the power that in these videos from the US, that the ICE fascistic ICE army, I would say, domestic army have, and you fetishize with that power because you can hold a power over another.
Yeah, but it's not just the power. The other image I saw was the that one you showed me of the Israelis showing the father and daughter with an Israeli flag standing outside a house, which we know is
in the AI generated images used from on the basis of Studio Ghibli's artwork.
Yeah, exactly. And I looked at that, and you take out the Israeli flag, all right. But just looking at it, the first image, even to me, and I'm about as cynical an old bastard as you get. But even to me, I see that image of the father and his daughter standing outside a house, and the first thing that comes to my mind is me and my daughter, or my son, but it happened to be a girl in the photo. And it's an image of wholesomeness, and I can't help but identify with those people at a visceral level, even though intellectually I know that that's a house that's has more than likely been stolen from the Palestinian occupiers, and it's only made possible by the deaths of thousands, etc., etc., etc. It's still that these images just keep not only normalizing us to war, but encouraging us to feel empathy with the oppressors.
Yeah, and the normalizing, you know, which has always been a tool of fascism, the aesthetic, quote unquote, beauty of war. And we see that this is fascism. There is no doubt about it. This is how fascism operates. It's Walter Benjamin wrote about this in 1936.
As it was happening.
And that this, you know, things like the Avalon Air Show, you know, it's abstracting what the reality and the horror of these machines and this technology can do to be something that is in its kind of technological purest form to be a spectacle at an air show where you take your children.
Yeah, and that's the tragedy for the system of things like the crash that happened there and the crash that happened at the air show in France in the same week. Not the life or injuries sustained by the pilot, but the injuries sustained in the image of power. Okay, it actually, by having to comment on a crash at the air show, it showed that they're vulnerable.
Yes.
And this is what they don't want to do.
No. And, you know, it might be a good idea to send your email or call ADMA Foundation and write in your complaints about the traumatic experience of the plane crash.
Well, yeah. A traumatic experience. One of our colleagues was it only last Friday, arrested at, well, three of our colleagues, but one very close to us, one renegade activist, trying to block the entrance in there. But anyway, that was traumatic enough. Yeah. Dealing with the court aftermath is traumatic enough, but let's not go there.
Let's not go there because, I mean, these...
No. Yeah, okay. Okay, on to other news. Before we get into that, you are listening, just a reminder, the 3CR Community Radio on 855 kilohertz on your Melbourne AM dial. But we were talking about the tariffs.
And how much of, you know, just a week ago, you know, not what these tariffs were released yesterday, but a week ago, the biggest thing on the news and what everybody was talking about was defence and weaponry and the build-up of defence and the opportunity for us to really to hammer that while it's in the news and to talk. I mean, we talk about it all the time and that's kind of, you know, almost the amount that we talk about this shit is.
Yeah, I was talking to some people from one of the minor political parties the other day and they were talking about how people are wanting to talk about defence for the first time. And I said, well, that's because it's in the zeitgeist.
Mm.
All right, it's in the zeitgeist. Everyone wants to talk about defence now. I mean, really, things like Donald Trump are freaking fantastic for people like us because people actually want to hear about defence issues, whereas 3 years ago they didn't. I mean, I'd rather people didn't want to hear about defence issues, perfectly honest with you, because there was nothing to worry about.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But
that's not the reality we live in, unfortunately.
That's not the reality. And we're looking at Palestine. I mean, 1,000 people, as you say, in Palestine this week.
The breaking of a ceasefire and this pitiful comment by Penny Wong, about encouraging all parties to commit to the terms of the ceasefire without saying Israel has broken the ceasefire and has murdered 1,000 Palestinians in 2 weeks, and silence from Labor on this about...
All parties.
Albanese's spoken more about the 25% steel and aluminium tariffs that we spoke about last week and these tariffs than he has about the murder of 1,000 people, 300 of them children, by Israel and a country that the Labor government, who has presided over a genocide and actively supported a genocide over the last 18 months and the decades before that.
And not just the genocide in Gaza. I mean, we had a situation where I haven't got the name with me. I'm sorry to any Palestinians listening, but there was a village in the West Bank that was completely decimated.
Mm.
And it was decimated not just by the IDF. They had settlers fighting alongside them.
Yeah. And the camps, the refugee camps in Nablus and Jenin in the West Bank.
Yeah.
And now settlers are occupying those banks because they've been bombed by Israel. These are the refugee camps that were set up by the UN in 1948.
Mm.
And are now being bombed and decimated, that settlers are making their way and occupying those UN refugee camps.
And this is like they want, you know, I don't often get biblical, but occasionally I do. And it strikes me the book of Amos, where he was talking to a Judean and he was talking about, you know, woe unto these people and woe unto the other people. And in the end he says, but unto the people of Judah is the biggest crime of all, because they lust after the dust on the head of the poor and sell the homeless, I think it is, for a pair of shoes. And it's like, this is what they're doing. And he was talking, unironically, I guess, about the leaders of the State of Israel at the time. But this is what they're doing. They take their country, they decimate them. There's a refugee camp, which is the most abysmal conditions that most of our listeners could not even begin to imagine. And then they say, we want that as well.
Mm.
And it's like, and now they've gone into Rafah. And, you know, listeners may have heard the name of the village Rafah, which is in South Gaza. It's right on the Egyptian border. And there's a, it's like Albury Wodonga. There's a line through it, but there's a town in Egypt called Rafah, and there's a town in Gaza called Rafah. And it's right on the Egyptian border. And you've got, this is spreading. I mean, you've got Sisi and on Eid al-Fitr handing out McDonald's, which is not only the symbol worldwide of American imperialism, but on the sanctions, divestment and boycott list.
Yeah.
And so you got a whole lot of people. I mean, it's like they're asking for it to spread into Egypt.
Mm.
Like it's spread into Syria.
Yeah. And into Yemen.
And into Yemen.
And we've got and the Australian government is actively supporting the bombing of Yemen, actively supporting Israel's in bombing in Iran, in Tehran last year.
Yeah.
Actively supporting in Syria.
In Lebanon.
In Lebanon.
We've got, I mean, a huge population of Lebanese people in Australia, Australian citizens who have ancestry in Lebanon. And there's nothing being said about an Israeli government issuing evacuation orders, not for a small village on the outskirts in a rural area.
In Beirut.
In Beirut. It'd be like saying, well, all right, let's call a spade and say areas like Coburg and Faulkner. We're issuing a evacuation order for Coburg.
Yeah, within a couple of hours.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A foreign country. It's absolutely. Then you have Israel too. It's spreading so far. I've got no idea what the time is. Can you tell me how much time we've got?
Oh, we've got about 8 minutes left.
Oh, sorry. Okay. We got Israel now talking about bombing. Not talking about it, Al-Tan Air Base in the middle of Syria, and that's about as close to the middle of Syria as you can get, for those of you who can imagine a map of the Middle East. And because Turkey want to take it over. Now, they're using American-made planes, NATO-made planes and munitions, to bomb an airstrip to stop another NATO country. How does this work?
And who's making the money?
You come up with some news about the stock exchange in the post-Liberation Day tariffs.
Oh, yeah. So that's right. With all this talk about the tariffs, we've seen, you know, everyone shocked, and trillions of dollars have been lost on the US stock exchange. And I had a quick look at some of the major defence companies, namely Lockheed Martin, Northrop Grumman and Elbit Systems. And interestingly, they've all increased.
They've all increased. So if the whole... the Standard & Poor's and the NASDAQ have all not collapsed quite, but suffered a hit.
Mm.
For them to still be...
Doing fine.
It's got to say something. But, you know, I mean, what... On the upside, we could be seeing as a... Could be a seminal moment.
How so?
Well... I mean, in the lead-up to the election, I made no bones about the fact that I was against the way people were running the possibility of Trump down, because I was saying that Biden's no better. What do you want? More of the same. It was, you know, and I thought, if nothing else, Trump would hasten a collapse of U.S. society.
Mm.
And I think that's what he's doing.
Yeah.
That's what he's doing. He's talking about overtaking Greenland. He's talking about overtaking Canada.
And a possible military invasion of Greenland.
A military invasion of Greenland.
Whether that comes to pass is another thing. But
they've already got, what's it called, the Patupi. It used to be called Tool. air base in northern Greenland, which is there primarily to monitor Russia. And people, you think Greenland. We have Chris Barry, for example, just to go off on a tangent. Chris Barry has said that, has pointed out that the biggest threat is climate change. And one of the ways this threat is already coming to pass is because of climate change, the Northern Passage through the Arctic is becoming navigable. And that's why they need Greenland.
Yep.
All right, because up until this point, what's the point? No ships could get through there. Hardly any submarines could get through there. The Russians lost a couple there in my living memory, nuclear submarines on the bottom of the sea. But now with the Arctic becoming navigable and all resources being found there and more readily exploitable, they need Greenland and they need Canada.
Yeah. And just as you'll see on the flip side of that is more islands start to go underwater, and climate change being, which has been considered the largest kind of threat to national security and border security here in Australia, then you're going to see a double down on the fascistic border patrol and border policies of any Australian government that's going to come to pass.
Yeah, Chris Barry, a former Chief of Defence Force in Australia, wrote an article that came out in the Canberra Times, I think it was, the other day, and John Menadue republished it today, where he's not only said, I mean, it's about a different issue which you won't go into, every China-US war game I've seen, America has lost, but he talks about the fact that it's everybody knows what's facing us, what the problem is existential climate risks. And he's saying crops will fail, states will fail, people will fight to survive. I've got it open in front of me. And we're not dealing with this, but this is what's coming to pass.
Yeah, this is what's coming to pass. And, the election trail is on, and this is, and this is what's coming to pass. But I guess...
What can you... Words fail us.
Words fail us because...
It's a khaki election.
And you've got one fuckwit out there saying we're going to develop nuclear power in Australia, who looks like an absolute monster. And then we've got, on the other hand, the government that has presided over a genocide for the last 18 months.
Yeah, one of them looks like Voldemort and the other one looks like Chucky, but they're still monsters.
They're still monsters. So, yeah, make sure you get out there. It's going to be on the election trails.
Yeah.
Give them heaps.
But that's about all we've got time for.
That is all we've got time for. You're tuned to a Friday rave on Community Radio 3CR.
And we'll rave at you more next week.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.